Love is recognizing the other as yourself. In this podcast, Eckhart talks about the future of religion. He says the next step for the human race is to shift from worshiping God as a concept to experiencing God as part of our own essence. He explains, once we awaken to this realization, we no longer contribute to suffering in the world. The ego disappears, and with it goes continuous judgment of others. He says, when we don't react to their personalities, we recognize the sacred depth of others as the same one in ourselves, and the separation between us and them disappears. Eckhart calls it the manifestation of the one consciousness. He also says, this understanding of the other as oneself is love, and it connects us to a vastness that we may also call God.
Our destiny for humanity is, as I see it, the next evolutionary stage, which is this gathering actually is part of that. It looks like just people in a room listening to somebody. That's the surface. On the surface, that's what it is. But if you look deeper, there's a huge energy field that's operating, and that is the awakening of human consciousness. This is the next stage in evolution of humans. And the strange fact is, the awakening happens. What awakens you, mostly, up to a point, is, well, how do I put it without shocking anybody? What awakens you is if life takes you out of your comfort zone. Life needs to take you out of your comfort zone so that you encounter some kind of obstacles or tribulation or something makes you, oh. That is suffering, as the Buddha called it, suffering, dukkha. And the suffering has a function. Everybody has a spiritual teacher, I sometimes say. For most people, it's their suffering. And then you may reach a point, you will reach a point, you have reached a point where suffering is no longer needed for the evolution of your consciousness. It has brought you to this point, and for that you could be grateful. For most of you, it applies that if you had not suffered, because every human has their share of suffering. If you had not suffered, unlikely that you would be here. If I had not gone through deep depression and deep unhappiness for many years, I would not be here. I might be sitting on a sofa somewhere drinking beer and binge watching Netflix. And feeling sorry for myself. So it's the suffering. So many people have told me, so many times have I heard people said, if I hadn't had this serious illness, or if I hadn't lost all my possessions, or if I hadn't lost, even in some cases, through the death of close family members, even death of children, if I hadn't gone through all this loss and that, I would never have understood your teaching. It's not really a teaching, but I call it that. And people have told me often, they were given a book like The Power of Now by a friend, and they opened it, and it was completely meaningless. He said, what is he talking about? They put it on a shelf. Years later, they picked it up again, and they opened it. Oh, wow. But what happened in the meantime? Well, in the meantime, the wife left him, he lost his job, he fell ill, had an accident, and then was in hospital for a long time, but then finally recovered. Many bad things happened that cracked open the shell of the egoic state of consciousness. It cracked open. What was it, Leonard Cohen or somebody had a light? There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets out or in, out, I suppose. So the suffering is an essential part of the evolution of consciousness. So in your life, what looks like the obstacles to your awakening are actually the hidden portal to your awakening. people think if I could only, I would awaken spiritually, but I need to be left alone by life, and I need surroundings that are conducive to spiritual awakening. Ideally, a resort on Bali, where and I need the purest food and environment that's just brought to me, so that I can meditate in peace. So, and of course, body work. I need a lot of body work to. These are ideally, if I had that, there would be a chance that I could spiritually awaken. I'm not denying that what you are describing may be a very pleasant experience, but it is very unlikely that it will lead to a spiritual awakening. It could lead to a brief moment of, aha, a brief moment of being present. Oh, perhaps when you're receiving bodywork, your mind stops. Yes. Oh, it's great. But the real thing is the confrontation with the tribulations of your life, and then enter into a state of acceptance of the isness of the present moment, even if you're in a prison cell. And I've had communication from many people in prison, and many have said they have achieved a degree or complete sense of freedom or liberation by surrendering internally to the now, to the form that this now takes. And that is amazing transformation happens when you can accept this moment as it is, particularly if it appears to be negative. Not talking about taking action in order to change things. Sometimes action is called for. But again, the question is, does the action arise from a state of resistance or dissatisfaction or denial of the present moment of, or does the action arise out of a state of consciousness of deep acceptance, but you still see what needs to be done? If you're stuck in the mud somewhere, to use a kind of analogy, because many people are, metaphorically speaking, stuck in the mud somewhere. If you're stuck in the mud somewhere, this moment is as it is. And then the next thing is you take action to get out. But a different kind of action arises if the foundation was a state of consciousness of acceptance of now. There are some successful, so-called successful people in the horizontal terms of the word. Let's say you're a business person. If you're a business person, entrepreneur or whatever the words are, you try to create something new. Now, are you conscious while you're doing it, or are you unconscious while you're doing it? If you're unconscious while you're doing it, then it's all egoic based, and every obstacle you encounter, and you may realize if you have practiced entrepreneurship, basically your entire job is problem solving. Every day a new problem arises. And some business people think this should not be happening, and they get angry with every problem that arises. And then they react out of that. But there are some others, and they make it worse. By reacting angrily against an arising problem, you amplify the problem, usually. Sometimes the problems come in the form of an unconscious human being wanting something. And you react and you increase their unconsciousness and yours. And then events sometimes get blown up out of all proportions through egoic reaction. And some others tend to be much more successful. They don't resent the fact that an obstacle arises. And they come, of course, they come continuously. And they immediately look at it. Instead of complaining about the obstacle, they say, what is it that can be done? And then they're able to be still for a moment. There's a key for even very active people who may not be drawn to meditation. In important situations, and especially when faced with challenges, can you be so alert that you're still for a moment and look the situation, face the situation fully, and then see what is it that can be done? And the answer of what it is that can be done then comes out of a moment of stillness. And it will be just right for that situation. It will not make it worse, it will make it better. It will circumvent the problem, or it will transform the problem into something good. Life continuously throws things at you. Isn't that strange? And many humans believe that when adversity happens, this should not be happening, there's something wrong. Well, yes, it is true that you can positively change your life to a great extent if you, for example, practice positive attitude, positive thinking, will greatly help you in transforming your life. But even there, life will not leave you alone. You will still encounter the challenges, and that's fine. You will still encounter some kind of problematic situation, difficult person, loss of one kind or another. Every human needs to experience that. And you can change your attitude towards that by realizing that it could not be otherwise, that evolution itself happens because of it. It looks all the obstacles that arise, seeming apparent obstacles to the evolution of your life too, in consciousness, they are needed because the strength on whatever level only comes when it is absolutely needed. This even applies on a physical level, and it applies on the mental level, and it applies on the spiritual level. If you want to make your body stronger, you don't do it by making your body more comfortable. Because there will be no influx of energy into the body, because it's not needed. But when you make demands on your body, then there's a gap where energy is needed. You're lifting a weight. It's at first not very pleasant. And the body is crying out, "Leave me alone." But then the body says, "I need more energy, I need..." And then an influx of energy comes. Or you start jogging. At first you go, "Oh no, not again." At some point, the body demands more energy, and energy suddenly comes flowing in. And then it even begins to be enjoyable with the influx of energy, which would never have come if you had not, let's put it in this terms, if you had not made life difficult for your body. The body gains in strength because you made life difficult for your body. Don't go so far as to make life so difficult for your body that it collapses completely. That's another story. Find the middle way in everything. So there was a famous orator in ancient Greece. He had a speech defect. He could not talk well as a young man. And in Greece, to be a great speaker was one of the most highly regarded things, to be an orator. And he wanted to go beyond his speech defect, and they say he, in order to get beyond it, he put little pebbles in his mouth and started delivering speeches to the ocean, the sea, and he was there with pebbles and was shouting and talking to the ocean, to the sea for several years, and in the end the speech defect disappeared and he became one of the greatest orators in ancient Greece. And again, there was a demand for it. So if the obstacle hadn't been there, There was a philosopher who said, everything important happens in spite of. Everything important happens in spite of. Don't add anything. In spite of something, whatever. In other words, something was holding it back, and then it had to, the energy was. So when you face tribulation in this life, then there's an opportunity for generating more consciousness. In when you encounter life's difficulties, there's an opportunity for developing more consciousness. And as you rise in consciousness, the transcendent dimension of awakened consciousness comes in. You begin to transcend the very problems that before you seemed unsurmountable. You transcend them, or you live with them and they are no longer that important. So you can transcend them internally. Let's say you have a body that is disabled in one way or another. And the problem then, as you awaken spiritually, sometimes it happens that the body gets healed. And at other times, it happens that the transcendent consciousness arises and the disability of the body is no longer a source of suffering for you. But it was a source of suffering for quite a long time, until a very deep surrender happened. And in this deep surrender, you transcended this source of suffering. And then you still have the same body, and yet you're no longer psychologically suffering because you have transcended. So many things in this life, they can be, you can overcome an obstacle or you can transcend an obstacle. If you overcome an obstacle when external things, you do external things in order to remove the obstacle to get beyond it. If that is not possible, then internally you transcend. So it no longer, the obstacle, the so-called obstacle is still there, but it doesn't matter anymore to you. It is no longer so. In fact, you may be grateful for it. So when things happen in your life, you face it and you look at it and you become, the alertness is required when you're faced with a difficult person or situation. You become alert, so that you don't react out of the conditioned mind. Even little things, when people could get irritated, airports these days are wonderful places for spiritual practice. They've always been places for spiritual practice, but much more so now. This is a small scale thing, but if you don't practice with small scale, you will not practice with big things. Relatively small things. Yes, your flight is cancelled again. No, nobody can give you any information, and the luggage is lost long ago. And there you are. You can either react out of the conditioned mind, or can say, this is what is. That's what is. If you have been irritated, and you can use any situation, if you've been irritated or angry, I recommend this spiritual practice, and you do it like this. How would I experience this situation if I didn't add any thought to it? Now, you can't answer that unless you actually do it. So, how would I experience this irritating moment and these awful people who are working for the airline and they're completely uninterested in their job anymore, and so on and so on and so on? How would I experience this moment if I didn't add any thought to it while I'm just standing here in this line? And any thought would be, for example, well, this line is so long, I'm going to be here for at least another 2 hours. That's a thought. It's future, not now. There's no 2 hours now. There's just the, how would I experience this moment if I didn't add any thought to it? Okay, let's try it. We might as well. Nothing else to do. So there you are. And here you are. Okay, I'm not adding any thought to it. I'm not, in other words, I'm not interpreting it, either favorably or unfavorably. I'm not trying to convince myself this is really good. That's another thought, and it would be not really true in that here. It just don't let anything, there you are. And you look around, and here we come back to sensory perception. That's the first thing you notice is, lights, there's this, people everywhere, or movement of people standing. But you don't even call it that, you just, artificial lights, lamps. And you're breathing, yes, I'm breathing. Breathing. And if you become aware that you're breathing, it's part of this moment. When you don't add thought to it, you may suddenly become aware that you're actually breathing. And then when you become aware that you're breathing, you might also sense that there is an aliveness that pervades your entire body as you stand there. Because the breath kind of puts you in touch with the inner sense of aliveness, that which animates the body, not the physical body, that the animating presence within the body that keeps it all together. That you sense that, but not through thinking, through sensing it. And there you are. And perhaps, let's say, on a horizontal scale, 3 minutes have passed. Where's the irritation now? Where's the anger? Where are the thoughts, I can't stand it anymore? Nothing. You haven't added any thought, and this moment is actually intensely alive. And you can sense this moment, whatever it is that you perceive with your senses, and you also become aware, through becoming aware of the inner aliveness of the body, which is consciousness, you become aware of being conscious in this moment. You can sense that you are this presence through which you perceive everything. And there's a stillness there, but it's not the stillness of half asleep stillness, alert stillness. And there you are. And this moment is now free of suffering. And you suddenly realize, in most cases, the unhappiness that you experience in any situation is not caused by the situation, in most cases. It's caused by your interpretation of the situation. In other words, the story you tell yourself about the situation. So it's not the situation, it's the story. There was an ancient Greek philosopher, the first person who ever verbalized that truth, Epictetus, not very well known. He said, what makes you unhappy is not the situation, it's the story, what you tell yourself about it. Even that little thing, if that's all you remember from tonight, could change your life. But ultimately you don't have to remember anything because it works at a deeper level. But yes, practice that and always find out when irritation and other things arise, how and where do they arise? At the level of the events and situations or interpretation? So here we come back to the little practice that we already looked at, perceiving without interpretation, and then becoming aware of yourself as the awareness behind the perception, so to speak. The awareness behind the perception, the stillness behind the perception. There could even be a lot of noise outside. In order to realize the stillness within, you don't need the outside to be silent. Let's say there is a lot of noise, cars or engines, whatever, unpleasant noises, and you completely let go of adding any thought to the sense perception. There's the noise. And there you are, not adding any thought, this is what is. And you become aware of the awareness that is perceiving the noise, and that's the stillness. Becoming aware of the awareness is the stillness. In the midst of noise, you can realize the stillness. And sometimes it's precisely in those situations where you would have thought you could not realize it, that's where you can realize it, in often seemingly situations that are not conducive to awakening, but they are, including people. Great opportunity for spiritual practice is people, because you might have noticed that people can be very difficult, and often they are very, really difficult to deal with. And for many people, their main source of suffering is other people. So there's nothing personal in there. Every human being manifests their level of, in evolutionary terms, their level of consciousness or unconsciousness. Nobody can act beyond their level of consciousness or usually unconsciousness. Now, we approach the same thing again from a slightly different angle. This awareness is vital, not just the awareness of sense perception, that's the beginning of it, but then more deeply the vertical dimension opens up when you become aware of yourself as a presence, so to speak. Another way of experimenting with this, ask yourself, what does it feel like to be me? What is the thing that actually is the most essential thing about me? Weird, me. What is the most essential thing about the sense of I? Is it the story of me, the personality, or is there something deeper? For a moment then, let go of the story. You don't need it right now. Whatever it is that you think you are, what you call my life is a narrative in your mind, it's not your life, it's your story, and identification with your story is your personality, but it's not your life is now, but and it's not yours, life is now, and you are it, life and consciousness are one. What does it feel like to be you right now, without any reference to memory or anticipation? No reference to memory or anticipation. Are you still there without remembering who or what you are? Or what is left when you no longer refer to past or future, memory or anticipation? Who or what are you in this moment without your story? And I don't expect an answer verbally from you or conceptually, because that's not the right answer. The answer is deeper. You can only sense what is left in the absence of the story, what is left of you, and that feeling, how do we talk about it? The feeling of beingness. The feeling that you are, that's left. Feeling of presence, that you cannot define it in any way. There's no age in it. It doesn't matter whether you're 20 years old or 90 years old. It's not to do with your age. It's not to do with your body, which is to connect it with age. It's not to do with any life situation, whether you are a great success story or the opposite. It's not to do with your race. It's not to do with any of those things. It's deeper than that. Not to do with man or woman. As consciousness, you're neither man nor woman. What is left is pure presence. And now, that is important to just to realize that the pure presence that is left, that is always there, underlying everything, that is consciousness itself. Now, there's another question, where does that come from? Maybe we'll go there, maybe not, we'll see. But this consciousness itself is there, and then This is when people are afraid of death. What they don't want to lose is there's something, they feel there's something very precious that's me. They don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose that, me. And this very precious thing, it's not a thing, is actually, if you really go deep enough, it is the consciousness that is the essence of who you are. And that consciousness in ordinary life becomes mixed up with objects. The one consciousness takes on different forms, thought forms primarily. Sensory perception also become thought forms. So the consciousness takes on form, continuous form. And that means the pure consciousness gets, one could say, mixed up with forms that arise. It's a little bit like, well, you can say there's gold, and then the gold becomes all kinds of ornaments and jewelry. It's formed into this and this and this and this and this. Many things can be arise. They're made of gold, but the pure gold is prior to that. Or another analogy that sometimes occurs to me, it sounds a little strange. If you don't like dairy, don't listen to this analogy. There's cream, the cream, and there's the skimmed milk. This image came to me a long time ago when I was deeply immersed in the sense of being. And then I opened my eyes and I looked around and I very strongly felt there was the cream, or there is the cream, and everything else is diluted cream, skimmed milk. all the things of this world. And the sense of being essentially you, if you go deep enough, it's not the story. The story is all the form that consciousness has taken. That's all. So it's not separate from consciousness. It is a form that consciousness has taken temporarily. And so what is it that has taken the form? Consciousness itself. Now, the analogy I often use is the ocean and the ripple on the surface of the ocean. You are a ripple on the surface of the ocean. For a long time, you only knew yourself as a ripple, living with other ripples, many of them making your life difficult. All the ripples are there. And at some point, the ripple realizes it is not just a ripple, it's actually part of the ocean. And the attention of the ripple, instead of looking at other ripples, well, what can I do now on the surface of the ocean? Suddenly the ripple goes, oh, because one ripple called Eckhart said, what is there when you stop, when thinking subsides? Oh. And the ripple goes, oh. Suddenly feels the ripple is actually supported by an expression of, inseparable from, the vastness of the ocean. And then the ripple goes, oh. Life isn't so bad after all. And it knows how relatively fleeting horizontal life is. But it's now connected to the vastness of the ocean. But the strange thing is, the ocean itself realizes its own being through the ripple, because the ocean and the ripple are one. So the realization that you are consciousness, and a person only is a surface phenomenon that subsists for a while. It can even subsist beyond death and take on another form, especially if you were deeply identified with form. The identification continues, and another, some one could say, illusory, problematic existence arises until you've suffered enough. So, and then you suddenly connect to the depths of who you are. So this, now, mainstream science will probably tell you that consciousness, well, it actually hasn't much to say about consciousness. It has no idea what consciousness is. But it, some scientists say consciousness is a byproduct of brain functioning. In other words, the chemical soup of the brain somehow produces consciousness. I don't know how that could be. There's undoubtedly a relationship between the brain and consciousness. But is that, does the brain produce consciousness, or is the brain a channel for consciousness that brings consciousness into this dimension? Does the brain receive consciousness in this way that a radio receives a transmission? And let's say the radio, I don't know if people still have radios these days, but whatever is the equivalent of a radio, the radio is playing a symphony by Beethoven, and then is the radio producing it? No. If something, a brick falls on the radio, suddenly the symphony stops. Does that mean it doesn't exist anymore? Or is it just that the instrument for its transmission is no longer functioning? So there are some more enlightened scientists who are questioning the material explanation of consciousness. But you don't really need to even go into philosophy. Even just in your personal experience, you can verify that who you are on every level, not just on the deepest level, even on the level of the personality, which is still relatively superficial, but even there, you do not exist in the physical realm. If you existed in the physical realm, it would be possible for a scientist or a surgeon to cut open your brain and find you somewhere. If you had an existence in the physical realm, it would be somewhere in the physical realm. As you would exist perhaps as molecules or atoms. But so far, no scientist has been able to find you, and by cutting open your brain, you would find all kinds of things. It may find that the brain is no longer functioning well, like a radio that's getting too old. But you, with your countless memories, that your millions of memories you have, they live somewhere in you, but where? Do they have thought itself? Memory is thought. What is a thought? Even their scientists don't really know what a thought is. There's some relationship between the brain and thought, but thought itself, you cannot find thought in the physical realm. So when you think something, thinking itself already exists in a non-physical dimension. You cannot find it in the physical realm. And if you go deeper, that becomes even more true. You are multidimensional. So when you go under the surface of things, which is here, under the surface of things, you are already, most of you is invisible. All I can see of you is the physical body. But what goes on in you, you cannot find it in the physical realm. Every thought, where does it live? So we don't need to go too deep into philosophical discussions, but consciousness is the greatest mystery in the universe. We have, on the one hand, the mystery of the microcosm, the atomic and subatomic realm. The deeper we go there, the more enigmatic the world becomes, and we realize ultimately there is nothing physical ultimately. But it's a huge mystery. The other mystery is outer space. If you go into space, the vastness and seemingly the infinite nature of space. Another incomprehensible mystery. When I was 12 years old, I was puzzled by this thought. What is beyond the universe? Does it have an end? And I tried to visualize an end of the universe. Can't do it. If it has an end, there must be something beyond the end. So is the universe infinite? Two great mysteries, macrocosm and microcosm, but the greatest mystery is that the universe is conscious. The universe is conscious. Wow. How do I know that? Well, I'm conscious and I'm the universe. Of course, you are. You're not a particle that has come into this universe. You are the universe. You are the universe that is in the process of becoming conscious in this dimension. So in this dimension, there seems to be an evolution of consciousness, even on this planet, from very simple life forms gradually to more and more complex life forms, more and more consciousness, evolution of consciousness. Where does that come from? I can sense the consciousness that pervades the entire universe. It is within and without. When you become present, you can sense this presence that pervades everything, that is the space, is itself. This sounds a little mystical, I can't help it, I have to say it. The space itself is presence. And the consciousness in you, this consciousness, is, as I see it, an emanation from a transcendent dimension beyond this universe. There is a source of all life. It doesn't exist in space or time. Traditionally, the source out of which all life emerges, the primordial intelligence that is behind the manifestation of the multiplicity of phenomena, the primordial intelligence that is behind it all, the organizing principle behind it all, traditionally called God, and that from there, in the same way that the sun shines and gives life to this planet, the light of the sun continuously is life-giving. The same way the source, the transcendent source of all life, emanates into this dimension, it emanates consciousness. And in this dimension, there is an evolution of consciousness here. Consciousness itself is timeless. So when you sense the essence of who you are or what you are as a conscious presence, what you sense, if you don't mind, I'll use a theistic term. Hopefully you're not too uncomfortable with it. What you sense is the presence of God in you. That is the realization of the essence of who you are. You are an extension, one could say, of God. The essence of who you are is timeless. And when you can sense that, here and now, nothing to think about, just sense that precious presence of, some people call it the I am. I am beingness itself. That is the consciousness of the universe. But it does not originate in this dimension. So this awakening then is sometimes also called God realization. I wouldn't go so far as to say that I am God or you are God, but you are, yes and no. The ripple is the ocean, and yet the ripple is tiny compared to the ocean. The ray of sunlight is connected to the sun, and yet the sun is infinitely vaster than the ray, but they are one. So the future of religion is for humans to transition from having God as a mental concept to worship to realizing their own essence is eternally connected in oneness with the One, and then you lose your fear of death, and the personality becomes something that loses its heaviness. It's something you live with for a while. And the realization also affects the way in which the personality operates. The personality becomes considerably less dysfunctional. It still has its limitations. As a human, you have your limitations. Not the craziness disappears. You don't cause suffering for yourself and others, except accidentally when you stepped on something, a worm or something. You stepped. Okay, sorry, very sorry. You don't cause suffering. You don't contribute to the suffering of this world anymore. The relationship with other humans changes. You don't react to their personality. You can look beyond the personality, can sense the essence of the other as consciousness. That's a beautiful thing when you can look at another human being. And the personality is there, but you're not that concerned with the personality. You interact with it, but you can sense more something deeper. You look at a person, there's a presence. In that presence, you are one, there is not two. And that's how this awakening changes the way in which humans interact with each other. The sense of absolute separation and continuous judgment that the ego loves disappears, and you can recognize the other as, in essence, as yourself, as another manifestation of the One Consciousness. And this recognition of the other as yourself is love. That's what love is. You recognize the other as yourself, and the sense of separation disappears. And this is where we are going as a human species. We are moving into a turbulent time period, which is all fine. It is needed for the awakening of many more humans than those numbers that are awakening now. Remember the comfort zone. You don't awaken in your comfort zone. So your mission in this world is to manifest, allow the consciousness that you are to flow into this world and to operate in this world, not through the egoic mind, but from that deeper level. As much as possible, go there, the vertical dimension, and many moments every day, take some deep conscious breaths, practice sensory perception without labeling, and sense the awareness that is the essence of who you are and that connects you to a vastness that we cannot really name, although I did call it God. Thank you.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.